roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goat. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goes, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
From the fight capital of the world, inside the beautiful Mandalay Bay Racing Sportsbook, you are listening to another episode of the MMA Junkie Radio Show. The only show that matters. I'm your host, Gorgeous George, and with me as always is the devious and dastardly Goes, our ace co-host. What's up, Goes?
What up?
Man, kind of an eerie feeling. The Mandalay Bay is kind of quiet today.
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, we're not going to stay quiet because we got some fun stuff ahead. We're going to do a slight preview of the UFC North Carolina rally card. You know we got to mention the Irishman, Conor McGregor, because there's always a news nugget involving him, even though we're not sick of it, but I feel like we're just retreading a lot of the same stories over and over. All due respect, when the man fights, it does create a lot of storylines. Plus, there's a lot of news nuggets just involving the rest of the roster. Believe it or not, Cub Swanson, we'll catch up with him as well. So, folks, buckle up. It's our Thursday edition of MMA Junkie Radio.
In 2008, a former D1 football star pulled off a robbery so daring and so strange that it went viral worldwide. It was a perfect crime story. There was just one problem. It wasn't the real story of what happened. The Sneak is a new, serialized true crime podcast from For the Win and USA Today Sports. You can subscribe now on Apple Podcasts or get it anywhere you get podcasts on Tuesday, January 14th.
Goes, at what point in time would you like to talk McGregor?
Let's get it over with.
All right. How about Kavanaugh saying, his coach, John Kavanaugh, saying he'd like him to fight Justin Gaethje at 170 pounds. Something about that camp makes me react. I don't dislike the guy. I really don't. Remember, we knew this guy even before the UFC. I thought he was brilliant, honestly, when we would have him on prior to his Cage Warriors fights. After his Cage Warrior fights, I think every time we hung up the phone, I'd say, man, if every fighter could just be like this, it'd be so much easier to do the show, for the sport to grow. Anyway, when he said that, I thought, yeah, motherfucker, that's who you guys should have fought, you know, not Cerrone. But this 170, again, I mean, look, he has good intentions. Really, if you think about it, he's saying, hey, I don't want to put my guy, my athlete, through that brutal weight cut of an extra 15 pounds. It's not good for your internal organs. It's not good for the mindset. Hell, who knows if they recover with enough hydration in the brain? You know, do they get back to 100% goes? That's a question, I guess, that we've never really, I guess, scientifically gotten an answer for. Versus the guy, you know, the guy that's just going to weigh in at 171 versus the guy that is still trying to compete, you know, use this stock as a lightweight, but yet, or excuse me, the guy that has to cut to 56 or 55 in the title fight versus the guy that is still competing, you know, with his stock, the value of his fight going towards lightweight contendership, but he only has to fight at 71. So the guy that cuts, when he rehydrates, does he rehydrate to, you know, 100% safety, you know, when it comes to the rehydration of the brain part? Who knows? Whole other topic. But still, it's not that I hate the idea. It's just that, look, this weekend, we happen to look. Rafael Dos Anjos, Michael Chiesa, they're in the co-main event of the UFC on ESPN Plus 24 card out in Raleigh, North Carolina. You know, those two moved up because they couldn't make 55. And have you ever heard them describe what it was like to make 55? It was basically agony. But if you told them, hey, guess what? You could still compete at 55 by weighing in at 71 throughout, you know, as long as you and the opponent are cool or whatever. And then if there's a chance that you're fighting for a title, which in the case of RDA, he's already been a champ, then we need you at 55. You don't think those guys would still be lightweights? I mean, it's possible, right? Maybe Chiesa, no. Maybe he would have outgrown it by now. But if all those times you just gave him 71, he might still be there, Ghost, because he has yet to fight for a title. RDA is a different case.
I hate this idea. I think it proves absolutely nothing.
It's what one championship does, basically.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why we have these weight classes. And the one thing that I point to when I hear this come out of his mouth is basically what I think he's saying, without saying it, is even if we do get the belt, we have no intention of defending it. Because why wouldn't you want to like get those weight cuts under your belt, figure out how to get those down, how to perform at the optimum performance? If you're going to face a guy like Khabib, I would actually want to go through those type of tests to just make sure we got that dialed down, instead of being surprised the day of when he gets that fight, because we all know he's going to get that fight because they're going to set it up for him. But this is just another one of those instances. Like, this is why people get upset with him, is because he gets this special treatment that nobody else in the UFC could ask for anything like that and not get laughed at. It's so ridiculous. Like, you're going to fight Justin Gaethje at 170. Who knows at this point? I mean, this would be like back-to-back fights for him. If really, I think a lot of us just kind of assume, he walks around right around that time. Well, who knows? Maybe he lives his life differently, and actually come fight night, maybe he's even bigger than that. So who knows, man? But I just don't see what it accomplishes.
Yeah, I didn't think about the whole part of he has no plans of, you know, defending. What he probably wants to do, honestly, is beat Khabib and then do the trilogy. I know he still wants another Floyd fight. Who knows about Pacquiao? Man, and then after that, I don't think he wants to become the welterweight champion. I don't think he wants that smoke. Those are some big dudes. But if it's Masvidal, he may think, I can lure this guy into a BMF fight and we can fight at 170. Usman would just want to smother him. He just want to say, what he would want to do is like the steroid version of Khabib, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Hey, I can do what he did. I'm just a bigger dude.
But this doesn't make sense to anyone. Like, can you imagine if, say, the Lakers were to say, hey, we all know we're pretty good, right? And we're going to make the playoffs. How about we just play one quarter? And then when the playoffs come around, then we'll play four quarters.
Yeah, they'd save their legs, that's for sure. But I'm thinking like Hooker and Felder, you know, they got to cut weight. Their fights mean something. They're on streaks, you know what I'm saying? Felder, he's fought at welterweight before, and he said, man, it was you know, the result wasn't beautiful because he lost to Mike Perry, but still, he was like, man, I feel great. You know, Pettis, same thing. Remember when he knocked out Thompson? I feel great. Mm-hmm. A lot of these guys feel great because they don't have to go through the weight cut. Kevin Lee, he moved up to welterweight. It didn't feel great for him. He got smashed by RDA. You know, but 65, 75, please, where are you? Dana, please reconsider. You reconsidered women's MMA? Reconsider this. I'm blue in the face talking about Conor McGregor, but that was one story that came out that I know evoked an emotion out of you and I.
They got to be sitting around just laughing their asses off, because that doesn't make any sense. I think they just huddle up and go, man, say something crazy today. This should be fun.
Exactly. Upset the masses. Anyhow, all right, look, let's go through some news nuggets here. I mean, I'm just going to go in rapid fire. Don't forget, we are going to be talking to Cub Swanson on today's show. Woodley and Leon Edwards in London goes, Woodley hasn't fought since last March of 2019 when he lost his title. He took the whole year off. When he lost, you could tell he was mad. I think he was mad at himself. Who knows if he probably did some soul searching. Hey, man, the raps, TMZ, my gym, seminars, acting, you know, was he spreading himself too thin? I don't know, but I felt like he was going to come with a vengeance, you know, make a comeback with a vengeance in late 2000 or mid 2019 or late 2000. I don't know. I can't believe it's going to be over a year by the time he fights Edwards. And even this fight, he wasn't warm too early on.
I don't know that Tyron Woodley really needs to go out and reinvent the wheel or anything like that. Like, Kamaru Usman's a tough guy. I think he gives just about anybody trouble. I'm glad that he's somewhat doing that. Like, right now, Woodley's in Thailand, and it seems like he's going to be there for like a month or something like that. So I get where he's coming from. I understood his mindset and why he was upset with the UFC a lot, but I'm glad that he kind of came to his senses and took this fight, because the faster way to get to where he wants is just to get in there and fight.
Yeah, I hear you. What you can't do is turn back the clock. That's where the UFC has the advantage. Picture you're a team that has a 28-point lead in a football game, but it's the fourth quarter with 6 minutes left. Do you think you're scared of the other guy's quarterback, whether it be Brady, Rodgers, Breeze, all those comeback specialists? I mean, you are, but you also know there's only 6 minutes on the clock, or 6 minutes on the clock, baby. You know what I mean? Go ahead and score. We're going to do this prevent, but then we're going to run it a few times where you're going to use your timeouts. And you're just going to run out of time. And that's basically what the UFC does. They squeeze the fighters, I think, in a sense, knowing their leverage is father time. Woodley, at this age, to be off 1 year, oof, I don't know, man. I really felt like one fight should have already happened by now. But who knows? Maybe he was injured or just not ready to take it. But basically what it boiled down to is I think he knew. It's explained there in the article on MMA Junkie. His agent, Abe Kawa, told him, hey, look, do what Masvidal did. And Kawa goes on to explain, Masvidal went and stole Till's England following by defeating him, respectfully, you know what I mean? You're more popular than Leon Edwards, so just go out there and embrace your London, your England fans, you know what I mean? And beat this tough dude. But yeah, you're going to have to go overseas because there just doesn't appear to be another quality fight out there for you.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think the UFC wants to make things easy on him either.
True.
So at some point, you just got to stop fighting the UFC and start fighting the opponents.
It's like Woodley dated Dana White's sister or something like that. Something, you know what I mean? Like, okay, we're relatives. We gotta sit Thanksgiving and Christmases together, but you weren't supposed to date my sister. You know what I mean? So I'm going to make it rough on you when I get a chance. How about this? In that same interview, Abe Kawa touched on Mike Perry's side of his use of the N-word. Not the N-word, the slang term, I guess, of the N-word. Mm-hmm. What'd you think of his explanation? I mean, it was very broad. I
didn't really understand
it. I think what he was saying was, look, where Mike Perry comes from, even non-African-Americans use it, and African-Americans don't trip on people who use it where Mike Perry comes from. So he's in a comfort with that word. Forget about the 2% and the DNA, just... And goes, I've said this before on the show, I don't know in how much detail, but I'll say it again. You are in denial, folks, if you don't think that word gets used a lot in the streets from ages probably 10 to 20, for sure. And up until that early 20, by the time you're exiting college and you're starting to mature, it is just a word that has become acceptable to the kids. If you're gaming online, you hear it. On YouTube, you hear it. And I think it's because pop culture, in a way, embraced it. And I'm not trying to turn this whole thing into a, you know, pop culture lesson. But I'm just saying the use of it is out there. And I think a lot of people take advantage of these situations to be prim and proper and save their jobs and be PC. And, of course, I prefer that word not to be used. I'm just saying it's out there. Perry feels like I'm not committing a crime. So what Gabe explained was, in Perry's mind, I'm not committing a crime. Why is everyone tripping? Mm-hmm. You see what I'm saying? He's not, the PC world doesn't mean too much to him. He's a fighter through and through. He worries about training and fighting, and he reacts. He's raw. He's honest. But he's not trying to be hurtful. He's just talking like they would talk at the gym or on the streets or the barbershop or whatever.
You have to be mindful of your surroundings, right? So, like, if that's what they do where he's from, cool, do it over there. But the second you accept a job like this, you're worldwide now. Mm-hmm. You have to adapt.
That's true. If it costs him his job, he better lose that word. Yeah. So I don't know what kind of if I was Abe Kawa, I would kind of pull Dana White aside and go, look, are y'all tripping over there in Las Vegas?
Mm-hmm.
So I can relay the message to this cat that it's the word just needs to be lost. Because the one thing I don't think Mike Perry, you know, there's a lot of those people that say, no one's going to stop me from saying what I think. You will if it means your job, you know, your ability to feed your family. And I don't know if Perry's like, hey, well, I'll go to Bellator, PFL, or whoever. And who knows if they'll accept him. I'm just saying, I think he enjoys being a UFC fighter. I think he was born to be a fighter. Mm-hmm. I don't know his background much. You know, maybe there's an engineering degree there I don't know about or whatever. But I would imagine that if this really means that much to him, he just better stop it. But the explanation was there. The article's there. And like I say, I'm not taking his side. I'm just saying I thought there was going to be more of a backlash, and there was for a few days. But maybe because of UFC 245 and all the other crap that's happening, it just got swept under the rug. But, you know, I'm glad it was touched on by, here by the manager and our website. Of course, you know, we initiated the coverage of it.
I understand his argument. His argument just doesn't apply. You know, if I go on vacation to another country, I can't do things that I do here and expect everyone to be cool with it. Mm-hmm. You know, I can't go, the speed limit's different where I come from. They're going to go, yeah, but you're not where you come from right now. You have to adapt to this country. Mm-hmm. It's just kind of, that's how, kind of how I look at it.
All right. Moving on. Let's see here. Curtis Blaydes, Junior Dos Santos. Let's talk about that fight. That's the main event. We talked about the co-main. We didn't really break it down. Well, let's talk about it. Chiesa and RDA. We'll go back to the news nuggets in a second. Chiesa and RDA, just because we mentioned their names. Who do you like?
That's tough, man. You know, RDA, when he's on, he's sort of a nightmare for just about anyone.
Good at everything, right?
Yeah. And so I can see Michael Chiesa, if he can get a hold of him early and get a good position, I think he can tire him out a little bit. However, that's just seems to be something difficult to do to a guy like RDA. RDA seems like the type of guy that puts pressure on you from the get-go and makes you adapt to his game. And I think there have been fights where Michael has fallen into that trap. So I'm going to go with RDA on this one.
That guy can leg kick. He can do jiu-jitsu. Wrestle, punch. He's got the cardio. He's got the experience. And even though he's usually the undersized 170, still a handful, man. Chiesa, for him to win, I mean, they wear 4-ounce gloves. I never forget that. He either needs to clip them or take them down and make sure you stay on top. You know, use your size, stay on top. It may have to be a boring Holly Holm tactical type of, listen, man, this is all we're going to do. You know, we're going to run the ball right down your throat. We're not really going to pass it and do reverses and flea flickers or anything like that. We're just going to grind this out. Because I'm telling you, RDA is one of the toughest outs in the history of the game. Junior Dos Santos versus Curtis Blaydes. Speaking of top game, riding time, punishment, ground and pound. Blaydes is looking to do that to Junior Dos Santos. Can Dos Santos stop him, goes, and keep it on the feet and throw some hands?
Yeah, I think I guess this doesn't apply to every single fight, but we're almost to the point where there really is no more striker versus grappler type matches. It's just some guys are a little better at things than others, and that's the situation, and I think they're going to go to their strengths. But I don't know that if either guy gets in certain situations that they can't, that it's like a death sentence, you know, that they can't get out of it. Mm-hmm. I think Junior can get back up.
I think Blaydes
can throw pretty hard. So I mean, I honestly think
especially when he takes your back, dude, you know what it looks like? It looks like a grizzly bear just playing with his little cub. And Dos Santos is a big cat. He's 6'4", like 245, I think. But Blaydes is just big and thick, and he doesn't mind wrestling. Like, he doesn't even care if you go, that was boring.
I'm going with Blaydes just because, you know, he's the younger guy. Mm-hmm. And when you look at Junior Dos Santos and what he had to go through with the leg injury, and just add that onto his shoulders of just trying to get back to where he wants to be, that to me is enough to sway me over to the Blaydes side.
Yeah, I think Blaydes is going to win, but I'm hoping Dos Santos wins. I've always enjoyed his style, and I always felt like he's the type of guy that can... Brazil is a huge country, huge resource for MMA. I feel like if he's winning, kids are watching, and kids will want to train MMA, and we'll get a future crop of stars. He's just got this little, you know, I said grizzly bear earlier. The other guy's like a teddy bear a little bit, kind of like Big Nog. You know, you kids just gravitate, you know. Hey, what does he do for a living? I want to do that. Anyway, RDA and Chiesa, did you give me a prediction?
Yeah, I went with RDA.
RDA, for me too. Are you rooting for Chiesa, or are you an RDA fan?
I don't dislike RDA, but I really like Michael Chiesa. I think he's a great guy outside of the cage and a fun fighter to watch inside the cage.
All right, let me just blast through this. Thiago Alves is signed with Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships. That's really becoming a space there for fighters to go to. No longer is it, well, Bellator, ONE, or PFL. Where are you going, you know? I mean, or Ryzen. Bare Knuckle FC, you know, that's always an option, right, Goes? And they're writing pretty good checks.
That's what's so interesting about this whole... So his whole thing was he wants to fight MMA. It really... And it's not so much that he laid out, like, I like the PFL more because of this, or I like Bellator because of this, or I would just want to stay in the UFC or whatever. It really just came down to money. And so that leads you to believe that bare knuckle must be slinging a lot more dough than the MMA organizations. Because if that were the case, if they were all level, then he probably would have ended up in MMA. So I have to imagine that whatever bare knuckle gave him, it was significantly more than mixed martial arts, which is very, very interesting to get somebody to do that.
Yeah. Good luck to him. I mean, some fighters have done well there and made some dough. Fabricio Werdum calls out Alexei Linick. I don't blame him. Kind of taking the jiu-jitsu angle. Romero and Adesanya is official, folks. UFC 248, it will be taking place. Lastly here, Gina Mazzani in the UFC, they've parted ways. She's an Extreme Couture fighter, so we see her all the time. We saw something on the board that told us she was fighting somewhere else, so I guess this right here made it official. Shabazian versus Brunson, UFC 248. O'Malley reaches settlement, goes, no more of these pulsing effects and, you know, whatever that O-string case is, has. He's fighting at UFC 248. Daniel Pineda officially fined, suspended, has his wins overturned after the drug test failure. That was a rumor around town, but now it's official.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you have it, folks. There's our Thursday edition of MMA Junkie Radio. However, we're going to leave you with Cub Swanson. It's time to talk to the UFC featherweight. All right, we're on the line with Cub Swanson, UFC featherweight. How you doing, Cub?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you guys doing?
Good, man. Happy New Year. Although I just watched the latest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm. It might be too late for Happy New Year. So if I'm a little late with that. anyway, listen, man. You had a great fight with Crone Gracie to end the year as far as mixed martial arts is concerned. And then, you know, Quintet came up the week of UFC 245, and I thought, man, what a great idea. You get to see the Pride guys and the Strikeforce guys and WEC, UFC. I honestly showed up, Cub, to that event just looking to go be nostalgic, you know what I mean? See some old school fighters together with some of the current fighters like yourself, have a little bit of fun, maybe get competitive. But boy, when I saw your injury and then subsequently I found out how serious it was, man, that just broke my heart.
Yeah, I mean, I felt the same way. You know, we had a good fight. Obviously, I worked a lot of jiu-jitsu for that camp, but, you know, the game plan was to try to avoid it. But I thought that I would end up being there more than I was. So I wanted to roll back into another fight, and the Quintet thing came up, and I was one of the first people that they called. And when they mentioned Team WEC, I just, it took my heart. I'm like, man, I'm still Team WEC always. So right. I just wanted to do it right off the bat. And I was like, man, I've been doing so much jiu-jitsu, I might as well have a good time, make a couple bucks, hang out in Vegas, watch the fights, and then start training camp right after Christmas. That was the game plan. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was unfortunate, you know. And I had been saying, man, I hope no one gets hurt so they get to do more of these. And then I was the one that got hurt. So, yeah, it was unfortunate. And you know, I try not to beat myself up about it, saying, oh, I should have done this or I shouldn't have done that. So I've been in this game for a while, and I know that injuries happen. And so you just got to say, okay, this is what it is. How do I make it better? Let's move on.
Right. So first let's talk about the actual sequence that led to the injury. And then I want to backtrack a little bit to the Quintet format. You were up against Jake Shields, and, you know, it's no secret. He's a really good, for one, he's a really good MMA fighter, too. He's won some titles, some major titles, and, of course, he's very well known in the grappling world. He's a 170 guy in the MMA world. You're a 145 guy, so size advantage there. But, again, we'll talk about the format in a second. The actual sequence in which you hurt your knee, how would you categorize it? What did you feel was the... If there was I don't know if I want to call it a gentleman's agreement or anything like that between all the competitors, just, I mean, you guys were going 100%, right? Or was there anything that anybody talked about, like in some sort of a meeting that said, hey, look, just have fun, you know, cause this isn't your real career. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So yeah. How can you answer that question? I guess.
There was no agreements. I mean, everybody kind of just knew that it was nice to be around everybody, because everybody was backstage during all of this, together, joking around, you know, poking fun at each other, and it was just all fun. And so that was the only difference. There was no real gentleman's agreement, like, hey, let's not go hard, because everybody wants to win. Right. But in the rule books, there was no twisting leg locks or no heel hooks. And so that was the position that I kind of ended up in. And I have grappled Jake before in the past at CSW, and I've known, I felt like his game was pretty basic, but when he gets on top and if he can pass your guard and move up, he's going for a head and arm choke. And it's pretty hard to stop because he's just so much bigger than me. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't want to be on my back against him. I was pretty confident that he wouldn't be able to take me down that easy. My takedown defense has gotten pretty good over the years. And I knew that if I was on top, I would do well. So I knew that he had just had a hard match with Mark. He did way better than we thought he was going to do against Mark. But he did have to waste a lot of energy, you know, really going. So I just wanted to try to push him and make him take some terrible shots, or, you know, try to get a gas tank going and not try to push the pace on him towards the end and get a submission myself. But he ended up pulling guard a couple times, and we ended up in the heel hook position. And I wasn't worried about it because I knew we couldn't do it, but I realized that he could just wrap my ankle and go for a straight ankle lock. And with his size and length, it would be a lot of pressure. I'd have to tap pretty quick if he got a good hold of it. So I started hiding my foot, and then I was trying to slide away from him. And that always works for me because I'm always going against guys generally my size. But when I realized how long he was and how strong his legs were, that kind of was like, oh, man, my hip feels like it's giving out a little bit and trying to slide out of this because I'm pretty limber. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that he did is he reaped my leg, which is usually legal in tournament, but I believe it was legal in this one. And basically he was trying to kick my far leg out from under me to sit me to my butt to get on top. And I was not wanting to let him do that. So I was trying to, you know, get to my feet and slide my leg out. And so when he started to kick me down and I was trying to stand up, all that pressure just was on the side of my knee, and it just went pop, pop, pop. And we both felt it. He let go right away, and I just was like, I was so frustrated at that moment. And I think everybody could tell. And when they saw the replay, they knew what happened. But, yeah, I fully tore my ACL and tore my meniscus.
So according to the rules that you just let us know about and what Quintet relayed to you all before the event started, he did nothing unsportsmanlike then.
He what?
He did nothing unsportsmanlike then, is what you're saying.
No, I think, you know, looking back and having seen the picture, I think that he didn't need to do that. Mm-hmm. If you're really, you know, trying not to hurt somebody, I'd have to watch the video again to really see. Yeah, I don't know. You know, like I said, when you're both trying to win, it's hard to call. But, yeah, it's a dangerous position to be playing in, and I think I play in it too often in kind of training. But like I said, I'm usually going against guys my size, and I can always get out. So having to go against somebody that was bigger than me and longer than me, it changed it, and I shouldn't have been playing around in that position. So, you know, I accept that I shouldn't have been in that position.
Did you speak to him afterwards at all?
Or, yeah, he apologized to me a million times. You know, like I said, I've known him for a little while. We've done some, you know, appearances together, and we've trained together briefly. Right. So I got nothing against him, and I know he didn't do it on purpose. Mm-hmm. There's no bad blood about it.
Good. Okay. And we know that you've already had the surgery, and so is it the typical 9-month recovery, or was anything else found along the way that might delay it, or do you think you could even come back faster? And I only say that because one, Tony Ferguson, I think, did a 6-month recovery or something like that. You know, others have gone past 9 months, but I guess the typical number we hear is 9 months usually for an ACL.
Yeah. And that's kind of my goal, is I'd like to fight like November, December. I've kind of put that goal in my head from the very beginning. That way I didn't start giving myself unreasonable goals. I do expect myself to heal fast, and just because I'm an athlete and I tend to give myself big goals, but at the same time, I've been in this sport 16 years, been with the company almost 13 years. Wow. And I got some wear and tear on my body, you know? And I'm 36. So I try to think about it, make an educated guess. I was always brought up to make, you know, educated assessments. Say, you know, take what you know and look at all the pros and cons and just, you know, think about it before you make a decision. So I was really thinking about it, and I'm just aiming for the end of the year. I'm sure that I'm going to feel better before then. But everyone keeps telling me, like, look, you're going to feel great at a certain point, but you're not. Just you know, wait and give it, you know, the full amount of time. Because, I mean, if I'm going to be honest, if I tore it, I think the likelihood of me fighting again becomes less.
Oh, wow. Because,
you know? I've been doing this for a long time, and I'm, like I said, I'm 36.
Right.
How long am I going to be doing it? The more injuries like this happen, really shorten that window. So, I would really like to rehab this one time really good and then be done with it, and not have to have the reoccurring, you know, I came back too soon. That's not a place I want to put myself in.
Cub Swanson, our guest here on MMA Junkie Radio. Let me turn it over to Goz, and then I'll come back with a few more questions I have. Go ahead, Goz.
Cub, now the night that you were there, Dana White was in attendance. He was right there when that happened. Did you get a chance to talk to him or any of the UFC officials? And can you maybe share what they said at the time?
Yeah, he was happened to be sitting right behind where our team was sitting. So when I got off, he started asking me right away if I was okay. And I told him, I don't know, they think something's wrong. So he said to contact that his people, the insurance people that work for the UFC, would contact me first thing in the morning, and they actually contacted me that evening. He said that they take care of everything, and which is really cool, and I wanted to take a chance, you know, tell them that I appreciate that, because it wasn't their show. They helped promote it, but it was put on by a different show, so they had their own insurance, which they were talking to me too. And I actually had the UFC people and the show, the Quintet show people, book me MRIs at different locations. And I ended up just going with the UFC. And they took care of my deductible, and they took care of everything. They've been very helpful. They brought me crutches the next day and made sure that I got the doctor in L.A. at I think of the name, Curlin and Joe, the name of the place. Yeah. Dr. Cavetti, yeah. He's a very popular surgeon. So they got me in to see the best people. They took care of me right away. They've covered everything. So I just can't, you know, go without saying I appreciate their help, and they stepped up and they didn't need to. So
that's very cool. And folks, the Curlin name, I've heard that for years watching many Laker games. The Job name, goes, you can relate to this one. Job, I believe, invented Tommy John surgery for the elbows. So he goes back a good 30, 40 years. But I just wanted to chime in on that. Go ahead, Goz.
Cobb, now you're just as big of a MMA fan, you know, as anyone. We kind of grew up watching all of some of these superstars that were at that event, to see Pride, WEC, Strikeforce. I'm sure it tugged a little bit of the strings on your heart, like you said, with WEC. Do you feel like that type of injury could maybe change things next year for Quintet, whether it be rule set or just certain things going away? Do you think it'll have any effect to any of that?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like injuries are going to happen. I think the UFC is definitely going to be more on top of who they let do the event. I had heard that they had already told a couple people that they couldn't, that had wanted to do it. So I think there were people that already had fights booked and they didn't want to run that risk. I had just fought, so I wasn't on the radar. But yeah, I think the event could have some rule changes. A lot of people were confused. I think a lot of the competitors showed up and didn't really care to read the rules beforehand, and they just had a lot of questions. So I think everybody thought the rules, there could be some changes, but the format was just so interesting. With you not knowing who's going to go against, it was exciting to know, like, man, I could go against Sakuraba, that would be sweet. But yeah, so I mean, I would love to watch the next one. I hope people are still going to be a part of it. I hope my injuries, I was kind of, I think people need to be aware of the risks that they're there, but don't be afraid to go out. You know, like I was telling my manager, who was, who's always been the one in my ear telling me, don't do this, don't do that. But at the same time, I was telling him, look, I still play soccer in a 35 and over league. And sometimes they're sliding for ankles and stuff like that. It can be dangerous. So I could have been doing anything and hurt my knee. So I'm not too worried about it.
That's very true. Let's switch over a little bit to your MMA career. A little bit of a change at the top of the division. Would you say that a guy like Volkanovski, do you feel like your skill set matches up better against a guy like that? Do you believe he will be champion by the time you get back into action?
I think so. The way he fought Max, I was really surprised that he was able to do so well with him, because Max has always done well. I've noticed that Max only struggles with people that are as tall as him. And he didn't seem to, keep the distance against Volkanovski. He just was able to get in, land shots, and do what he did. So I was really impressed with how he performed in that fight. And I'm not really seeing anybody beating him right now, but there are a lot of good people coming up. and I've always said this, that I'd want to be long gone before the next generation comes up, because the kids that have actually been born into knowing what MMA is, coming from their little kids, is going to be scared.
Cub, just a couple more quick ones for me. The, like what Ghost was talking about, the format, it's interesting, it's, they balance it out with weight. But I guess, is there, it's almost like an absolute, at Abu Dhabi, you know what I mean? And I remember there was a quintet here the year before, and I remember seeing big ass Josh Barnett, who I think you've actually trained with at CSW in the past. He was in this one, but just to do two men of, with a 100-pound difference, do they actually need to be locking up? Are we thinking this? Are we overthinking this just because of, kind of what happened in this instance here?
I mean, I've seen some cool grappling matches. I mean, I remember seeing Jeff Glover against Jeff Munson in a jiu-jitsu match, thinking, like, holy crap, this is one of the squirreliest guys against one of the biggest dudes. And just it was so intriguing to watch. I think that's why we all became fans of MMA. We want to see those kind of what if matches, the freak shows. I mean, they still do well in Japan. So I think that people want to see that stuff, because we're not punching each other. We tend to grapple against different size guys in the gym. So it's not outside of the norm. I think that we just need to be aware that injuries are possible.
Will you ever do something like this again, or do you think you're done until your MMA career is over?
At least until my MMA career is over, I don't think I think at this point in my career, I think I got a couple years left that I'm really willing to do. And I can't afford to take a year off like I am right now.
All right. Well, it's been great catching up with you. I wish we were previewing your next MMA fight. But I guess stuff happens, like they say, and there's another dirtier version of that But hey, you're a dad now with kids. I don't know if you're on speakerphone, so we'll clean it up. But man, like I said, it just broke our hearts to watch you do that, because we've literally, you know, I don't know, I think you just said something like 15 years in the sport or 16, and I think we've known you through all of them, you know, so it's kind of been cool to watch you, almost like, it's almost like we watched you play in the Rose Bowl, we'll say, you know, as a collegiate athlete, and then your whole pro career, you know what I mean, and not that it's over, because you still have gas left in the tank, but still, we know you're in your senior years, and after seeing that injury, you know, it just it tugged on our heartstrings a little bit. But it sounds like you're in great spirits. Just we can't see you, but we can hear you, and it sounds like you're in a good spot. So hopefully rehab's going well, and you know, spending a little bit of time with your kids, your wife, and all that's, you know, keeping you happy until it's the right time to get back in there and get sweaty and start a new camp.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. You know, I saw you guys in the stands, and I was excited to see you guys there. I was able to see tons of people out there. I was excited to see me get to perform in just jiu-jitsu. Like I said, unfortunately, it didn't work out the best for me, but I try to stay on the bright side of things. I'm really looking forward to once again showing that I can come back. I think people have always gotten, they always rallied around me having to come back, and you know, I've been starting to hashtag Killer Cub 2020 because I'm determined to come back and shine this year. And after I come back at the end of the year and win, I'm going to be really, really pushing for the UFC to come to Palm Springs, because they're going to be building a 10,000 seat arena in downtown Palm Springs.
Oh, cool.
I'm already letting the UFC know about it. And one of the people that's building this building is also one of the investors in the UFC. So I know it's going to happen, and I before I retire, I will have at least one, if not multiple, fights in Palm Springs. That's talent.
Very cool. All right. When's the arena scheduled to be done?
The end of next year.
The end of 2021?
Yes.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, that's great news. I did not know about that one.
Yeah, they're building a hockey arena. I think there's supposed to be a Seattle expansion NHL team, and this is supposed to be their feeder team.
Mm. Nice. All right. And the gym in Costa Mesa, all well with that?
The gym in Costa Mesa is doing well. I'm going to be doing a lot of my rehab there. I just had a meeting with UFC Gym Corporate. They're going to be filming some stuff with me, trying to, you know, kind of show my road to recovery and talk about gym and all that stuff. So the gym's doing well. Visiting's been in there too. So this year we're going to be both be in there quite a bit. So it's going to be nice.
All right, Vato Loco. Thanks for the time, man. Great catching up with you. All right, bud?
Yeah, thanks for reaching out, guys. I always appreciate you guys.
All right, take care. See you, Cub.
Later.
Well, he seemed in pretty good spirits considering, you know, the savagery of that injury he had, Guz.
And, you know, when you think about, like, I don't want to call them freak accidents, but he's just had these type of injuries that not every fighter has to go through. Just, you know, heartbreak fights that have ended really quickly. He's one of the first guys.
The broken hands that he used to get back in the day.
I remember Aldo, the quick
Pulver,
and then just the injuries, like, at Jackson's, right? His eye got obliterated.
That's right.
Like, he's just had a lot of.
Was that Melvin Gillard?
I think so. Yeah, I think that's how it ended up being.
And he had just broken the 4-5 win streak when he beat Cron Gracie. And I thought, okay, maybe things are going to turn right now, you know? And but interesting to hear his outlook, you know, on, hey, look, I want to do this one time, one strong rehab. I'm going to pay attention, follow him up. You know, I don't want to come back early. And then in 2021, he says, maybe Palm Springs in the UFC, 10,000 seats.
That would be cool.
That would be pretty cool. Great catch up there with Cub Swanson. All right, folks. That's it for today. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at MMA Junkie George. Goes is the Goes. At the Goes. And the radio show is at MMA Junkie Radio. And we'll see you on another edition of MMA Junkie Radio soon. In the meantime, go out there and be a champion.